This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I...
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I am Alex Simmons, and this week I am joined by the delightful Simon Cardy.
Oh, I was waiting to see if that would be me or not with the delightful. I thought it wouldn't, but I was very pleasantly surprised.
Well, I couldn't help the fact you were staring with this angelic look on your face.
When don't I?
Slightly well, cherub looking, aren't you?
Oh, thank you, Matt. Oh.
Looking, but not the way you behave. You're an absolute monster with the way you behave.
Yeah. Well, do you know who else is cherubic?
Is it Matt Pursley?
I was going to say you, Al. No, I was going to. No. We all are. Welcome to the Cherub Podcast.
The Cherub Corner.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to follow that up.
No.
But we have got a lot happening on this week's podcast. Matt, we're going to talk to you in a second. Obviously, there were some big trailers that dropped that we're going to talk about. There is probably the toughest quiz that we've ever done.
What?
Oh, God.
I wasn't told this.
Well, I had a look through it and I was like, shall we do it? I thought, yeah, why not? But I have put an easier round in of my own just to make it slightly...
You're so kind.
I know, right?
What a wonderful boss you are.
Oh, I love a challenge, though. I like to be challenged daily.
Oh, well, that's good. You're going to get that. But first, Matt, you saw probably the most anticipated film of the year, which was Paw Patrol, the new movie.
Yeah, I know, right? What a delight. I've not been able to go to the cinema for months, and to see animated dogs on screen, delight. What a delight.
You haven't seen
in
Scoop?
Truth, in truth, my wife took my son to see Paw Patrol. It was £3 a ticket, and it lasted 48 minutes.
That's I was going to say, bad, I've heard though. That Paw Patrol is, it's just a television show, isn't it, being shown on a cinema? What a weird thing.
Basically. Anyway, but you really did go and see an amazing film in terms of the expectation, which is Tenet.
Yes, Christopher Nolan's latest, eh?
Now, firstly, I don't know much about this film, which I don't think many people do apart from the people that have seen it. So you're not going to talk spoilers at all, are you?
Not at all. And should you wish to read or watch stuff about Tenet as well, my review is up on IGN now, I guess, since this will go out in the future. And that is also completely story-free. It's difficult to write about a film when you can't talk literally about anything to do with the plot. There's not even the explanation of setup in that review. And I will do the same here. But what I will say is that it is, again, it's another great film from Christopher Nolan. He's very good at thrillers, right?
And he's a very good filmmaker, I think.
I know.
It's a general opinion of Christopher Nolan. And do you know what? It's one I echo. Please carry on.
Good. So in terms of our review, I call it great because I gave it an 8 out of 10. Please don't complain that it's not a 9 or a 10. An 8 is, as we say, a great score.
It's a 4-star film.
Yeah. I genuinely had a fab time with it. It's got some grit to it in the same way it probably, if we were to say it was related to any of his other films, Inception's the one that comes to mind. And I think you've probably already had that idea from the trailers. It is, whereas Inception's a heist movie, this is a espionage movie that uses a kind of lofty sci-fi concept to work with. But rather than it being about the infiltration of dreams and going sort of like through these multiple realities, it's to do with time. Obviously, time is something that Christopher Nolan is obsessed with, basically.
Yeah.
And I think kind of a lot of his films have always examined time. Like Inception has the time element where it's about each layer of the dream, you experience time in a different manner. So the deeper you get, the longer time is for you.
Yeah.
There was a similar thing on, there's time for Interstellar, right? On the different planets, time progresses differently. Memento, probably the biggest film for him on time, in that it was about exploring. The interesting thing about Tenet is that it's the most direct like exploration of time that he's done, because time is the conceit he's exploring. It's not, whereas like Memento is kind of like this putting together something that you didn't know by exploring something backwards. This is literally time manipulation.
It uses
part of the plot.
Time as a storytelling device rather than a mechanic in its world, really.
Yeah, it's the MacGuffin of the film, for lack of a better way of explaining it. And the thing I really like about that is it dictates the structure. In Inception, the way Inception does a heist movie, but instead of, if you think of something like an Ocean's movie where like the team are moving through the vaults, well, the vaults in Inception are the layers of the dream, right? So Tenet does a similar thing where you'll have already seen from the trailers or what you know about it that it's to do with time flowing backwards. You'll have seen like the car flipping in reverse and stuff like that. You may also, if you even look at the title of the film, be able to surmise some ideas of what might be coming in the way that even that works. And that's all I'll say about how it does. But it creates, when you start to learn how the world of Tenet works, you can start to see where it's going. It's perhaps a little more predictable than certain other Christopher Nolan films, but that's because you're learning the logic of how it works. That logic, I think I can pick apart slightly, which is why I don't think it's his masterpiece. I think sometimes the time stuff is there in service of very interesting visual set pieces than it is more for the story. And when I got to the end of it, I kind of am a bit like, okay, so I understand where time is being used in example A, but there are some times where it's been used where I'm like, I don't really understand why they've opted to use time in the way that they have here. And it feels like it is sort of just being done because it looks very cool.
I've got, obviously, a huge question here. Is it better than The Prestige?
I would... So this is because I've got a slightly different Christopher Nolan ranking to a lot of people, in that I think Dunkirk is his masterpiece.
Really? Oh, see, I think Inception is...
So for me, it's Dunkirk, Inception, The Dark Knight, then probably The Prestige. So, but Tenet is very close to Prestige. I think my biggest problem with Tenet is that it feels a bit like it's Christopher Nolan doing Christopher Nolan, and that's never something I felt about his films before. And this is the one that, because it's got certain things that it shares with Inception and certain things that it shares with Memento and stuff like that, it does, I absolutely don't believe that this was the case, but if Warner Brothers had gone to Christopher Nolan and gone, we want you to make this film that we believe is a Christopher Nolan film, there's a little bit of that, which is what I would say is what lets it down from being like a 9 or a 10. And I don't want to say it's Nolan by numbers, but it definitely, nothing about it was like, Christ, I didn't expect that, which is what he has been able to deliver in almost every other film he's
done. It sounds like it's as close to a Nolan Bond as we're going to get anytime soon, because I know he's gone on record saying it's something he would love to do. Like, he grew up loving Bond films as a kid. Like, I don't think he will ever do one personally. I think...
No, and it's also like, how do you top the snowmobile section from the end of Inception? Like, that is his Bond masterpiece, basically. And I think the thing is now, like, I don't, as much as I'm trying to say I don't want Nolan to just keep doing Nolan, I want him to be constantly exploring different elements, I do think that all of his films should explore something a bit loftier. It's even like Dunkirk manages to have a lofty concept because it's exploring this terrible sort of situation from three different points over three different layers of time. And that makes what could have just been a beach evacuation quite, quite interesting. And so I think, is there anything in Bond? Like, it can't introduce the fantasy of something like time or...
No, you know, you can't really have a proper a sci-fi film, element in there, yeah. can you? No. Unless you say Moonraker is a...
yeah,
he did a remake of Moonraker by Christopher Nolan. I don't know.
But what's, see, that's the, what's the soundtrack like? Because obviously I'm a big Hans Zimmer fan.
Well, it's not Zimmer, is it? No. It's Göransson. And it sounds like a Nolan Zimmer soundtrack.
Okay. that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. See, this is it. It's like, it's easy to criticize these things because you can say, like, well, why have you just done that when you could have done something different? But also, it's this fine line that I have with it where is it Christopher Nolan operating as if he's a franchise or is this his directorial style? And like, we can talk about directors like Scorsese, right? Where I think
no one's going to tell him, don't make a gangster film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like I think in the modern day, because we've got so used to franchise-based cinema, if Scorsese was a modern filmmaker, you go, oh, he's just in, it's the Scorsese franchise. And this is where, like, there is the line where it's like, is this just his style or is this him being a little bit too safe? But yeah, the soundtrack is very Zimmer-like. It does... Right. It's slightly more electronic than I'd expect from Zimmer. Zimmer's much more about sort of like those big horns and the strings making those long sounds, whereas this is more... There's little electronic elements to it that I guess brings across that very sci-fi element to it. But it also has, whereas, you know, there's the Brahms of Inception and there's the ticking clock of Dunkirk. This has got, weirdly, Christopher Nolan breathing into a microphone as one of its sort of soundscape sections.
How do you know it's
almost
because I've listened to Christopher Nolan explain about it in a press conference I went to.
It almost sounds similar to Dark, because a lot of that soundtrack is breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it's got a Nolan soundtrack that I know I will listen to while writing because I listen to a lot of his work.
You listen to a lot of heavy breathing while writing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm seeing it next week. I can't wait to see it. And I'm, of course, there's the normal cast members. You get a little dash of Michael Caine. Branagh's back. I really am excited to see John David Washington because I recently watched Black Klansman for the first time and thought that film and him was absolutely incredible.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of Washington. I'm actually a big fan of Robert Pattinson as well.
Yeah.
This is where one of the things where I sort of like why it doesn't like hit the 9 or 10 for me is that this feels like it's going back to Christopher Nolan from a couple of films before the most recent ones he did, where he draws his characters a bit broader. They're the puzzle pieces that work to maneuver the plot. Whereas I think his achievement with Interstellar is like McConaughey in that feels so emotionally involved and he feels a really fully realized character. Whereas if you think of characters in Inception like Cobb and Ames and Arthur, they are there to move the plot around, and Cobb obviously has the stuff with Mal that is important for his... There's always a reason for someone in a Nolan film to do stuff. They always have a motivation, but sometimes they don't always feel like fully realised people, and I think Tenet has that in the... So it's not a spoiler to say that John David Washington's character doesn't have a name in this film, and I think that's almost a suggestion to... He's not there to truly be a character, he's there to move...
He's almost like, to sound really wanky, almost like a proxy for the audience, like you're just seeing this through him in a way, kind of.
He's the hands that move the components that are required for the plot. And then even Robert Pattinson's character, Neil, isn't fully drawn
His
out.
Name's Neil?
Yeah. They've all got single names. Like, none of them have really got surnames or anything like that. And they're all quite standard. Like, there's not... Right. Whereas, kind of, like, you look at Inception and it's Cobb and Ames and Arthur. They've all got slightly... You know, what's Ellen Page's character's name in Inception?
Ariadne.
Yeah, which is obviously comes from the Greek myth, isn't it? Because she's the person that does the thread for Perseus through the labyrinth. There's kind of not, at least from what I can see, there's none of that mythology here. It's much more, I guess, Nolan. I say, I think they're not there to be true characters in the way that's like they are in Interstellar. They are more there to move the plot around. And that's not entirely a bad thing because the plot's cool and it's obviously got lots of interesting stuff to talk about with time. But yeah, you're not going to come up, like, you can cry at the end of Interstellar because it genuinely is an emotional gut punch by the time you get to there. You're not getting that here, and I sort of wish that he had, because he's proven himself. And even in Dunkirk, where those characters are a little bit more faceless, but you carry the emotion of the situation.
Yeah.
And I think especially like Branagh's character in that, how he pulls through, is really interesting, and you don't quite get that here. But they are still compelling leads. Like, John David Washington is incredible to watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's great. I can't wait to watch it next week. And so can everyone else, because it's out. Was it out next Wednesday, I think?
26th, I think. Yeah. Sorry for any of our US listeners that have to wait a little longer. A
couple of weeks. I think it's, in my head, it's like the 13th of September. It's not too long. But yeah,
obviously, stay safe. Don't go and watch it in a packed cinema just because you're desperate to see a Christopher Nolan film. It will still be here when it's safe.
But
is that
you
your
will
want
to see it in
the cinema,
though, won't you?
Yeah. So it was my first trip to the cinema since, what was the last one I went to see? Sonic, I think, which would have been February, I guess, early February.
Yeah. I think actually, yeah. Apart, so I went to see Inception last week, but I think Sonic 2 was my last film at the cinema.
Yeah, and it was nice to be back.
I can't remember what my last film was.
We went to see The Lighthouse not long before.
When was that, though?
That was like early February, maybe late January, I think.
Might have been that.
I've not seen many films this year because I saw that. I saw Birds of Prey, The Lighthouse, and maybe something in January as well, but obviously, we were all gearing up when lockdown kicked in to see A Quiet Place Part 2.
Yes.
That's not even coming out this year anymore, for as far as I'm aware.
No.
Oh,
so,
well.
Just to recap, is it in your... Definitely not in your top three Nolan films?
Not in my top three.
Top
but it's,
five?
Is it top five? It could sneak into the top five. It might, because... Okay.
Do you feel like it's
he's got
one...
so many good films. This is like the problem, this is the thing, is I think Christopher Nolan's got, for me, he's got like these three that are such a beacon of what he can do that I think really represents his filmmaking. And when I came out, I said to Cardi, like, it's not top shelf Nolan, it's like it, but it's a good film.
It's still a very, very, very good film. Like, it may sound like a bit of a downer.
His middle tier is better than anything.
Yeah.
The conclusion to my review is, like, it doesn't matter that it's not Christopher Nolan's masterpiece, because it's still ahead of so many tentpole movies. And it just reminds you that everybody knows that listens to this podcast that I love the Marvel films, that I love all of that interconnected universe that they've built.
Mm-hmm.
There's still something to be said about going into a cinema where you don't know what's going to happen, you don't know what any of these characters are capable of, and at the end of it, you can sit with it in your thoughts, because there is a lot to think about. I took 9 pages of notes watching this film. This is, it's a complicated Nolan film, but it's done.
Yeah.
It's done. And like, I like that about it.
Do you think
they stand
little...
on their own?
From repeat viewings, you'll get more, like, Inception, The Prestige, those sort of ones, like, on repeat viewings, you're seeing things. Has it got that sort of vibe to it?
So, I am interested to see it again, because I think the thing I find with Inception that I think is so good is, I think it's really clean, and it explains very, very simply in its, even pretty much in, like, the first act to do with dreaming, it explains how that system works. And there was never at one point in that first watch, this isn't a brag, but I never felt lost in that film. I think it is so well at communicating its premise. Tenet isn't. There is a little bit towards the end where I was like, why exactly are they working with time in this manner? I don't quite understand why they'd want to do this. And so a repeat viewing might help me get more out of that and might clear that up. But I think to a degree that's a fault of the film. Like,
yeah.
He has proven that he can really clearly work with a big ambitious concept, and it's clean, and he did that with Dunkirk, he did it with Inception, you know. Even The Prestige, I suppose, has got that element to it, so it's not quite that, but yeah, I am excited to see it again knowing what I already know.
I can't wait to watch, and I'm sure in a few weeks time, a couple weeks time, whenever we decide to do it, we'll do a little bit of a spoiler talk about it, because I'm sure there's lots to talk about and theorize.
From one entertainment juggernaut to another.
Me.
Well, it could be you, or it could be Peaky Blinders Mastermind, which you reviewed this week.
I did review the Peaky Blinders Mastermind game, which is yet again another media project that plays with time in interesting ways.
Which is not what the television show does.
I've never seen an episode of Peaky Blinders ever.
I watched a bit in preparation for this review.
A lot of Nolan actors in it, right?
Yeah, you've got Murphy and you've got Hardy. You've got... Yeah. No, Sam Neill's not in a Nolan film, though, and that's a shame.
Sam Neill's good in Peaky Blinders as well. He's got a mad Irish accent going on.
I'll tell you that.
It's not as mad as Hardy's accent. Like, you can barely fucking understand what Hardy's saying in Peaky
Blinders.
He loves
doing that, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Thankfully, he's actually Tom Hardy's narrating the Tottenham Hotspur documentary coming to Amazon in a week's time, and he's just doing his normal London voice so everyone can understand.
Is he a Spurs fan?
I don't know if he is. I've never seen him listed as one. I've never seen him at a game. I'll tell you that.
Is there a list?
But Kenneth Branagh's a big Spurs fan. He narrates our intro video when we before the match. So there you go. Links everywhere. There you go. But yeah, Peaky Blinders the Mastermind is it's pretty much as bang average a game as you could play.
There you go.
It's not a ringing endorsement. I gave it a 6 out of 10 because it is okay. And on our scale, that means okay. It's set before season one of Peaky Blinders, so you don't really need to have any knowledge of the series. You just need to know it's about a gang in the Small Heath area of Birmingham in 1919, so just after World War One. And yeah, it's like a little self-contained story that it's a fine story. It's not going to surprise you in any ways, but it's basically there just to like glue together its levels. And you've got 10 levels that are kind of, they get good towards the end. They're like puzzle box levels where basically you control individual members of the gang one by one. So you want to get them, say you want to, you've got Finn, who's the child of the gang, so he can crawl through gaps which other characters can't get through, and say he gets to a point after crawling through that gap and there's just a locked door in his way. So then what you need to do is use the left trigger. I was playing it on PlayStation. I don't know what it would be on everything else, but you do that to rewind time back to the start to control another one of the characters to get them in a position where they can, say, pull a lever to open that door for Finn. Then you'd switch back to him. He can get through that gap. So it's basically just moving these pieces around these levels to try and get to the end objective of each level. The problem is, towards the last two levels, it gets genuinely fun and quite challenging. Like, you're having to pull these different characters at the same time in different places and think about what you're doing to get it done in time, because there is a time limit to each level. But for the first few hours of the game, it limits you to about two or three characters at a level as opposed to all six of them, and it's just fairly straightforward and there's not really much fun to be had, which is a shame. But
I watched your review, Fury, which is very good, Cardi. But the one thing that I found about it is I'm watching all these characters like pole levers and scuttle through things. That's not really what Peaky Blinders is about, for as far as I can see. Like, I've watched probably three seasons of that show, and I absolutely understand that, like, it's coming from a company that doesn't have the money to make it like a mafia style open world Birmingham where you're blowing up bars and stuff like that. But I would have thought something more like a Empire Management game where you were running kind of a criminal underworld.
So that would be more interesting than just opening a few doors or using a character to distract a guard so you can steal some champagne from the back of a cart for a party. It's not really what they...
Something that actually happens?
That's the first level, spoilers. You're preparing for a party, so you're stealing some champagne off the Gilroys.
wow. But at any point in it, do you get to use the razor blade in the hat?
Yes, you do.
Good.
So Arthur is a character who can beat up other characters. Right. Not that that's satisfying, because you literally just walk up to them, press X, and it does it. So, like, yeah, there's no real challenge to it, but you do get that animation. It's just, it gets, like I said, it gets quite fun towards the end. It just takes too long to get there, and by the time you're having fun, it's suddenly just over, which is a shame. Mm-hmm. I feel like they've got a good... So it's by Future Lab, the guys who did the Velocity games, and I feel like they've got an idea here. They just... Like, if they were to do a sequel or use these mechanics for a different property, I feel like they could do some interesting stuff with it. It's just they never really evolved the ideas enough in this one.
I think you're right. Find a different property. Mm. And because that idea of like having to sync up multiple timelines and sort of use that it almost as if it's like Premiere Pro, the video game.
It is a bit like that, because you have the timeline along the bottom with different coloured lines.
And so, like, finding that, and like it sounds like it's primed for a heist game where you're setting up all the people. Like, have you got your lock?
So there is one. Yeah, there is a lockpick. There is one or two level, and towards the end you do get more of that. And there is one level in the middle that's quite good, where you have to break into a prison, so it's kind of semi like a heist. And yeah, but you're still only limited to three characters at that point. And I wish you had all six of them for most of the time, because then it becomes complex. I think my main problem with the game is it's just not challenging enough to be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, check it out if you want. It's out on PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC.
It's cheap as well, isn't it? It's only
like £15 to £20, I think. So it's, you know, it'll take you about 4 or 5 hours to finish. There's a few collectibles. It's an easy platinum. I've looked at that. So Dale, if you're listening, I know you are. Maybe it's one for you.
It'll be interesting to see if people who are big fans of the show go in blind, expecting something else.
Peaky blind.
Well, yeah. Jesus.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's absolutely fine. So yeah,
it's okay.
Let's all flock to that.
Or not. One of the big surprises this week was, well, I didn't really know anything about it, but a trailer for Black Myth Wukong, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knew about it. It just dropped out of nowhere.
Yeah. And, well, on our site anyway, it's done 2 million views in 24 hours, which is insane.
Does it sound like the stats this morning? It was like, how many 200 odd million views in China or something on this trailer?
It Bilibili, their version of YouTube? Because obviously they can't. There's a lot of
laws
dictating whether they can use westernized websites and stuff like that. But yeah, their social media for video streaming has done an absurd amount of views on this. And yeah, it's a what appears to be a kind of Souls-like-y melee action game from a Chinese studio that we haven't really ever heard of before, but it's got, at least from the this is a 13-minute trailer, so it's big. Right? And I think it looks like it's been put out there to prove what they can do. But it's got the production values of kind of like a very large-scale American developer.
It looks beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of, as I say, slightly Souls-like-y, but it's a lot more, I wouldn't necessarily say colourful, but it looks a lot more vibrant than, it's not got that grim, dark gothicness of a Dark Souls game. And I think I'm right in saying, Cardi, that it's been confirmed now that it is based on Journey to the West, isn't it?
It must. Well, yeah. Yeah.
As Monkey, like the Monkey King.
As Wukong, yeah. And you'd expect that to not be as dark as a Souls game, because they are inherently kind of comic tales. I mean, if you don't know anything about Journey to
children,
the West,
aren't they, right? Like, it's a common thing you tell to your children.
Yeah, like, if you don't know anything about Journey to the West, it's a 16th century Chinese novel, so you may not know anything about it, but it's one of the most famous pieces of, like, Eastern literature ever written, and, like, the stories have popped up in everything. Like, even Overwatch has Journey to the West skins. You've got Wukong for Winston, for example. Yeah.
And, you know, if you might have actually played the story of it in Enslaved without realizing you were playing Journey to the West, but yeah, Ninja Theory's game from, when would that be, like 2009 maybe?
10, something
like
that.
With Andy Serkis as Monkey in it. But you don't get to play Andy Serkis in this. But yeah, it looks like it's got that challenge that a Souls-like has got. Maybe not quite as difficult, but it certainly relies a lot on well, I mean, it would definitely be played by a lot more people if it's not that punishing. But you play as Monkey. He's got like this big staff. There's lots of kind of wushu inspired. Is it wushu inspired if it literally comes from the country that
I don't
wushu?
Know.
sort of fight moves, lots of spinning of the stick, all the kind of the kinetic energy you'd expect from a man-sized monkey character. It looks like you can kind of steal enemies from other characters, steal weapons from other enemies and use them against big bosses. It's got like beautiful fur effects, and I think the thing that interested me most is that you can actually transform Wukong into a flying insect to kind of stealth past enemies. Which is something that I wish you could do in Dark Souls, because the amount of fucking times I'm trying to get somewhere and you just get mobbed by people and like that 5 minute run is over because you got mobbed. So it's got a lot going for it. I don't think the studio is very big, but they are actively looking for new people to join them.
Is it only currently like 30 people or something?
It's small. It's insane.
Like,
I think
knows.
They're looking for maybe another 13 or 14 people to join them.
Mm-hmm.
I get the impression with the amount of stuff that, the amount of attention that has been drawn to it, it wouldn't surprise me if a Western publisher reaches out to them fairly soon and offers them a deal.
Yeah,
and if they were to take that, that could potentially lead to much more people working on it. But we've seen an equivalent social media post from what we think is the creative director talking about how I think he's quite humbled by the response that it's had. Didn't quite expect it to go far, but they wanted to show it to demonstrate their chops. And he nitpicks very much a lot of the things, like, oh, I know that the frame rate wasn't right here and the water didn't flow quite right here. And it's like, dude, your game looks amazing.
Yeah,
and
it's just a proof of concept more than anything.
And in general, kind of China doesn't have the highest reputation for kind of video games. It tends to be a lot of mobile games and smaller kind of budget projects. And when we think of Eastern development, we tend to think to Korea and to Japan. But this is a game that could be a huge breaking point for their industry. Like, if it is as successful as this initial taste seems.
Who knows when we'll see it.
It's years away, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm looking forward to it. My only criticism is, I wish, and I never know if I'm pronouncing this right, I wish that it was Zubaji instead of Wukong and that we were playing as a giant pig rather than a monkey. Yeah. Just because that would be funnier.
Who knows? They might be in the game.
Imagine if it's a co-op game and you get to play as all three of the helpers. I think the third one's a water buffalo, so that would be good as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
More of that, please, is what I say.
There you go. The other big trailer that dropped this week was the first teaser for Call of Duty Cold War.
Yes. Well, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. But everyone's just going to call it Cold War. So.
Of course.
Yeah.
You were super excited by this, Carl.
I am. Just that trailer did a lot for me because I'm big into my Cold War. Like, it was my favourite thing at school. Like, I was always going to go on and do history at university, but then I thought I'm going to do something more practical that might lead to a career. So that's what I did. But I love this whole period of history, and I'm judging by it, they're going all in on it's a Cold War aspect rather than this is, you know, your traditional war sort of game. And I am interested to see what that means for the actual gameplay, because obviously Call of Duty is traditionally shoot. So
can I make a prediction, Cardi?
Yes.
I don't think it's going to be all that different, mate. It's
I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm also, because they're also heavily leaning on to, I don't know if you watched the trailer.
I have.
We'll get the full reveal next week with actual gameplay, it looks like. But I'm intrigued to see if they're almost modernising it in a way, because it's very much almost a recap of the Cold War, and then it says, know your history. I don't know if they're going to do more, like, playing on the Cold War is happening again now, or that it just never ended, because there is the argument that it never actually ended.
Cold Warfare.
To swing back to our friend Mr. Nolan... Yeah. I would actually really like the idea of there's something science-y that has been keeping the Cold War going, and this is about a Black Ops unit that is trying to break that hold.
Yeah.
Like, I like the idea of an espionage-based... Call of Duty has always had, like, the odd espionage mission.
Yeah.
But I'd like the idea of one that goes full-on, and it's not just you against other militaries, be they terrorist forces or big nations. I like the idea of counterintelligence blocks kind of battling out against each other, because that means that we get more interesting kind of battlegrounds, right? Like, the maps would have to be something that wasn't just a big Russian field to run through.
Part of me hopes it will just play on all the big events of the Cold War, though, and you're for some reason involved in all of them, like the Bay of Pigs in Cuba, or maybe one mission you play as Gary Powers and you're shot down by the Soviets. I don't know. Who knows? This is my pitch for a Cold War game. And then U2 starts playing, because why not?
I think the thing I'd like going back to that slightly Nolan-ish idea as well, which, and actually this is more of a Fincher thing. You know how the first Black Ops was, you know, it was Fight Club, wasn't it? But done as Call of Duty, sort of the way it had its... is it Reznikov? The kind of twisty stuff at the end?
Yes.
The Gary Oldman's character? Like, I'd like it to do something like that, because I'm not the biggest fan of Treyarch's stuff. Like, I think, like, anything after Black Ops 1, for me, like, I've always been an Infinity War guy, but I think Black Ops had an interesting ground to explore there.
The numbers.
And I think the Cold War is so... It's such a problematic war to document, because so much of it is shadowy, and there's, you know, years and years after you get new, as documents become declassified and stuff like that, you get new information. I like the idea of, especially with that know your history idea, trying to find something that allows them to bring an interesting fictitious element to it, which avoids them from being too offensive to actual veterans of the Cold War and do their own thing.
Like, I feel,
I think,
like,
there is interesting ground.
There were theories that it's going to be like a sleeper agent sort of thing that you will... I know kind of Black Ops 1 had that sort of vibe to it, but I do like that whole idea of being a sleeper agent. It's just, yeah, my big question is, where does the conflict come in? There's lots of little battles in the Cold War, but none of them were directly fought between the USSR and the USA. They're all, you know, proxy wars, basically. And a space race. Maybe it'll be a space race game. But will we get to launch Sputnik? That's just come to my mind. That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Do you think they'll get in a famous person to be the villain?
Again. Did Branagh do a good enough job in Tenet?
Oh,
get
no. Oh, fuck. His accent.
Has he not got a good Russian accent?
No.
And yeah, on top of that, I'm just intrigued to see how Warzone adapts in line with this.
Yeah.
Like, is there going to be in-game events? And then once it comes out, do all the Warzone weapons change to Cold War era weapons?
See, I'd love that. Because, like, I'm... Like, as much as I love Warzone, I think Warzone's cracking, and I think those modern guns are brilliant, but there is something about going back and playing the World War II Call of Duties and the rattle of those older weapons. And I know that we'd gone on quite a bit by the time we get to the Cold War. Like, weapons technology has advanced, like, almost by necessity because of the Cold War. But, like, I like using older guns in games, so I would like... I think there's so much that you could do with the threat of nuclear holocaust in a Warzone premise. Like, there's plenty of work that I'd like to see happen there. So, yeah, I'm... And the idea that we know that it's carrying on, right, and that they've said that the idea is to link their premium products with Warzone, of which presumably Cold War is that premium product.
I'm just very happy to be excited, because it's been a long time since I've been genuinely excited for the next Call of Duty. Last year I was lukewarm on it, like... Those bits I really love, bits I really didn't. But this time I'm well up for it, and I think that's mainly because I spent most of my year playing Warzone.
Yeah, I think in like this Call of Duty really reinvigorated the elements that I love about this series, and because I also think Infinite Warfare is brilliant. Like, I've stood by Infinity Ward, and I think they're great. I'm less interested in Treyarch's work, but I am interested in the fact that it's not just Treyarch this time. Raven Software, who have traditionally been over dozens of Call of Duty games now, I think, like a support studio, they are now considered like the code developer of this. So I'm interested to see what they bring to it. I don't know if anybody is working there who was working back in the old days of Raven, but they made like Soldier of Fortune, which is quite an interesting first-person shooter, and bringing that to it, if any of those people are still around, would be interesting.
I think it's next Wednesday we get the full reveal, so I'm very excited.
See, I just want a good campaign, because I thought Modern Warfare campaign, I thought it was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. I thought that it had good tempo, just the right length. Because I replayed the Modern Warfare remaster and then Modern Warfare 2 remaster, and you forget how good those single-player campaigns are. And I felt like that the Modern Warfare was back on par with that, so I really hope that Cold War delivers on that. But we will see. Alrighty, that's it for this week's news. Now, on to the Endless Search. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it Endless Search? This week's Endless Search has been submitted to us by TK Hayden from Texas. And he's been on a bit of a Star Wars kick recently, so he submitted a Star Wars theme version of Go On, Name God.
Mm. This could be hard, because there's people like me who know Star Wars, but then there's people that really, really know Star Wars.
What I can say, Cardi, is I'm so fucking pleased that it's not either me or you against Jesse, because that would be...
He knows, like...
Jesse reads the expanded depths. Universe, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let's see how we get on. Now, I have had to change his five questions slightly, because Cardi... You did start reading it, so you know what the first one is. So
I did not know the first one. But the good news is the first one we did do a few weeks ago, so that's fine. Okay. It needs to be replaced anyway.
Also, that is by far and away the easiest one. apart from the one that I've replaced it with. So, there are five questions. And as you know, I will be asking one of you to name as many of the answers as possible. Who would like to go first?
Oh, do you know what, Matt? You can go first.
Okay, what's the subject?
So it's all Star Wars. The first question is, there were 16 named Ewoks in the credits for Return of the Jedi.
And this is the easiest one.
This is the easy one. How many can you name?
One. Literally one. I only know one of them.
Come on, you must have had the figures.
No.
See, I think I could have done four.
Who fucking liked the Ewoks? As a child, I was not taken in by Ewoks.
Right.
I was a droids kid as a kid.
Are you sticking with one?
Yeah, Matt? One is all. Like, I genuinely can only do one. I know one of them.
Cardi.
I'm going to have to just try and risk two, aren't I?
Are you saying two?
Yeah, I'll go two.
Matt?
Go on now.
What bluff that would have been if I could name all 16. Yeah. Well, we'll have Wicket.
Oh, very good.
Are they all just odd names, or do some of them have... Like,
Jeff.
Yeah.
They're all, Neil. They're all pretty odd names. So, like... See, there was one of the figures that was the chief. What's the chief's name? Chief of the Ewoks. Remember?
They don't speak. They just make noises, don't they? Okay, let's go off the forest theme. Let's say there's one called Twig.
I probably wouldn't have done that.
Are they all cricket themed? Is there one cover drive?
If you were a bird and you liked making noise, you'd be a...
Oh, what? Tweet?
Almost another.
What?
What's another word for? What's the noise squall? That bird?
What? A squall is it?
A little
squall
bird
is it? Yeah. Isn't a squall like a meteorology thing? It's wind, isn't it? Squall.
Like a storm.
Don't birds squall? Like S Q W? Have I made up a word?
Anyway,
look that up.
Matt, yeah. You get 1 point
for Wicket. I knew Wicket.
So here are the others. So Wicket, easy. Yeah. Chief Chirper. I would have accepted Chirper. Low Grey, Tebow, and Peplu. Those are the ones I could have probably got.
What?
Now, and then it goes Nicky, Nippet, Rat,
Nicky.
Graf, Kazak, Rabin, Wusser, Leektar, Tokat, Nanta, and Flitchy.
Wow.
Genuinely, none of them I would have known.
Yeah,
I don't feel bad. Noises. It's not like one of those where I'm like, oh, how did I get that?
But this could go horribly for us, Matthew.
Right. One point to Matt.
Well done.
Well done. Great. Question two. To you, Cardi.
Yeah.
There are seven modern forms of lightsaber combat. How many can you name?
Fuck off. These aren't even in the films. How am I meant to... I know my Star Wars films.
Do you wanna Do you want to name
can,
any?
Can we phone a friend?
I can go one.
All right. Matt.
Six. Doesn't matter, you're going does it? For
six. I was going to say.
You actually going for six?
It doesn't matter. We none of us know any of them, so it's always going to be a bust.
Okay, name them. I couldn't even do one. So.
Go on then.
Literally, the only things I'd know is like from, I think in the Jedi Knight games, is like heavy, medium, and light, which I presume are not them at all. So this is a bust.
That's not the case.
There we go.
All right. The actual answers are Shicho, Makashi, Suresu, Ataru, Shien, Diman, and Duo. Come on, why did you not like that?
How many would you score?
I like...
Right. You will, with some guesses, you might be able to get some of these following answers.
Okay. If they're in the films, I might have a shot.
So this is to you, Matt. There are 12 places where kyber crystals have been found. How many can you name? And certainly, I've heard of three of these. Four of these.
Jeez. It's like, well, how...
And is
there any parameters here? Like,
planets. Planets.
Yeah, but I don't... Not that this is going to help me, but like, is this... Expanded universe, original expanded universe? Is this post the wiping of the canon expanded universe? I don't.
Hang on,
three though. I'll try three.
I don't know. Look, I didn't come up with this quiz. I'll ask TK.
It's in madness.
You're going three. I think
I'll try three.
I think I could have maybe done two. I want you to name three.
Okay.
Okay.
And one is I was going to give you based on a game.
So one is in the movies for sure. I think two are in the movies. One is from one of the animated things series.
Who watches them?
I do.
A lot of people. Go on.
I know they're
three.
Very popular.
Name three.
I know. I'm sure none
one?
Of these are. Dagobah.
No.
No. There yes. we go. Yavin 4.
No.
Also no.
I was going to have Ilum, because that's in the game.
Correct.
There we go.
Oh, is Ilum in where you get them in Thingy?
In the Fallen
game.
Order.
Fallen Order, yeah.
Also, I've gone completely blank. What's the fiery one? The lava planet.
Mustafar?
Does that
Mustafar?
Have one? The Mustafar system? I don't know if they have.
No, that's not in there. Tatooine, that's in there.
Oh, do they have one? Oh.
Dantooine, that's in there. Lothal from
Oh, what
Rebels.
About Crait? Do they have them?
No.
Oh, I thought they had them. Oh, well.
No. Right, currently 2-1 to you, Cardi.
It would have been hard enough just to name, like, Star Wars planets. Could have done that.
Well, good job you've said that, because guess what's coming up shortly?
Oh, no.
Question number 4 to Cardi. There have been 7 named owners of the Darksaber in Star Wars canon. Well, you know one of them, surely.
God. Well, hopefully. I know what his fucking actor's name is.
Oh. We've written so much about it on site.
I've not written about it. I've not written anything about The Mandalorian.
How many can you name?
What's his name? Oh. There's going to be a Darth in there, isn't there?
There might be. Why don't you just play it safe with one?
Let's go one.
Okay. Matt.
Go on, name him.
Oh, you're an idiot. What's his name?
I can hardly say Giancarlo Esposito, can I? That's
I know,
not
that's
his name.
I'm sure he's General something.
He shares the moniker with somebody from A New Hope.
Oh, he is
What, is he a moth? Moth?
He's a moth, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Moth, but what's his name? That's the key bit, isn't it? That is the key bit.
Yes, that what is his name?
Oh, Jesus. Right, I'm just going to... Because it's expanding the universe, I'm going to say... I'm just going to take a guess on a name.
Or it doesn't, you didn't have to go with him. You could go for somebody
else. I'm like, going to go
there's
for
another recognisable character in there.
I'm going to... See, I've got a couple on my mind, but I don't know which one to plot for.
There's two others that I recognise.
I'm going to go and say that this guy had one. Darth Tyrannus.
Incorrect.
The other one was going to be Thrawn. I don't know a lot about him.
I don't think Thrawn would have it.
I don't know.
Because he's Navy, isn't he?
I know his name.
So, Moff Gideon is the character from Mandalorian. And then he's got Maul in here. I assume that's Darth Maul.
Oh.
And then Sabine from Rebels also. I think that's that Sabine. Oh. There you go.
There we go. The things you never knew.
Last question.
To all, what a thriller, eh?
There are millions of planets in Star Wars.
We could be here a while.
Name them. No. No, it's not. No. But only 58 of them start with the letter C. I don't know why.
C.
C. Would you like to name them?
Well, it's Matt first.
Yeah. I can do one.
I'm just trying to find... So I've got an Excel sheet of all of the different names. Well, you've definitely know...
I know one. I can definitely do one.
But also, another one was mentioned quite recently.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that one wasn't. Was it? I can't remember. There is...
I don't know if some of them are C or K's. That's my problem. You're going one?
Yeah.
Two.
You're looking to the side, Cardi, as if you're looking at the screen.
I'm not cheating at this game.
Go on, name them. I can't, I know one.
See, I know one's not going to count. Well, I'm going to have Crate, because I said it earlier.
Correct. That was there's another one that I thought was much, much easier than that.
I'm trying to say Pal. You're prompting.
Okay. Well, if he doesn't know what it is, then he doesn't know what it is.
Okay. Oh, I'll get there. I've got a feeling they must be in the films.
They are in the films.
I don't know if this counts as the planet or not, because by the sounds of it, it shouldn't. Let me have a quick think.
Say it, coward.
I would have only got these two.
No, I'm pretty sure the planet's called something else. I think this one's a K as well, the other one I've got. I'm just going to have to give up, aren't I?
Why don't you say it, if you don't know?
Well, I was going to go Cloud City, but I'm pretty sure the planet's Bespin. So,
correct.
I was just trying to think
Coruscant,
of
Coruscant, mate. Coruscant.
I didn't know if that was a city as well.
Yeah, no. Coruscant is a planet.
And the other one
it?
I was thinking of was Kamino, but that's a K, I'm pretty sure.
Let's have a look. Kamino would not have
that's a K, isn't it?
Happened. But yes, it Coruscant happened, is the one. So that thrilling saga.
Oh, yeah, what an absolute event.
Ended with a win for Matt. Well done. 3. Versus 2.
This is the hollowest victory.
Please, if you have any endless search quizzes that you can send in that are slightly easier, that would be much appreciated. It's ign_ukfeedback@ign.com.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's move on to your feedback. And I believe, Matt, you've got the first piece of feedback.
I have a piece in from Barnaby Rowe, who I believe is a repeat emailer. I think we've
offender.
Had. I'm not saying he's an offender, but yeah, this was a podcast that I wasn't on, right? He says, "Hey guys, I'm the dumbass that bought Fire Emblem Three Houses on what I had mistakenly thought was a strong recommendation from Joe. I believe for anybody that hasn't listened to that episode, the idea was is that he's been listening to the back catalogue of episodes, got to a preview, an episode where Joe previewed Fire Emblem, from the good half of Fire Emblem, and then so Paul Barnaby went out and bought it because he thought that was a review, not a preview. And Fire Emblem doesn't have the best latter half of the game.
I'd agree.
So Barnaby says, I doubt any of you were waiting with bated breath for an update, but here it is nonetheless. What a shite game. I played played a fair few hours of it before realizing it wasn't going to get any better. So to me, this suggests that Barnaby might, if he's only done a fair few hours, I guess he didn't get to the middle bit where it actually has a really, really good central moment, but then it gets bad after that. So if you didn't like it before, you definitely wouldn't have liked it after. There's only so many irritating conversations with petulant, whiny students I can take before enough is enough. I have since deleted the game and taken the 50 quid loss as a life lesson in not making impulsive purchases. A lesson I apparently forgot when it came to Ghost of Tsushima, yet another pile of shite. But hey, what can you do? At least control AWE should be good. You'd hope.
Mm-hmm. I quite like Ghost. I know, Matt, you're not a big fan of Ghost, but I enjoyed it.
I'd say it was a pile of shite, though. I think it's not anywhere near as ambitious as it should be.
Yeah. No, I played it for a few hours, and it just didn't grab me at all.
For me, it's a mid-2000s Ubisoft open-world game, but hey-ho, we're not here to talk about that. What's the most impulsive purchases you guys have made that you almost immediately regretted? Cheers for the brilliant podcast every week, especially Joe. All right, thanks.
Well, he's the one that gave a bad recommendation.
I think it's because Joe normally gets a bit of flack. You know, people say, I like everyone except Joe. So
this is a balance now, that works. All the best from Barnaby. Impulsive purchases, chaps. What we got?
I tend to research my purchases. I'm not very impulsive when it comes to. I do have slight regrets with my. So about 4 years ago now, I bought a nice new 4K TV, but it didn't come with HDR because at the time I was like, I don't need it. I kind of wished that now I'd done it just so I have the option, because I keep looking at being like, could do with an HDR TV, but at the same time, I only got this one a few years ago and it is very good still. So,
What have you got, Cardi?
I've got a Sony Bravia 4K.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not.
It splashed out a bit.
It was like 600 quid or so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I spent my time, but at the time, I kind of made the judgment I don't need HDR, because I think even back then, HDR added a good couple hundred on. Like, because it's only the brand new models had it, but yeah, I kind of wish I'd done that.
I think for my next one it'll be a wait until I've got the budget to I'll go all out OLED, like LG.
Well, that's it. You have to, I think, because like if you buy even like the mid-tier one, so like the one we've got in the living room, that's got HDR, but the effect is it's obviously not the best it can be, so it's shite, and so I switch it off. Whereas we've got a new telly which is like a nice Samsung, and that the OLED, the difference is like night and day.
Maybe in a couple of years. Maybe I'll think about it.
Not necessarily an impulsive purchase, but more in line with games was. I can remember as a kid, I used to go with my dad to kind of like, I don't know, if you've ever been to like a computer market, I guess like a, you know. So we went there and there used to be a guy with a stall that sold video games. He was kind of like the only games bit out of largely a hardware section. And I can remember buying the Terminator 3 video game from him and getting that back and playing that for about 40 minutes before realizing it was absolutely irredeemable garbage. But obviously, how do you take something back when the computer market is only there once a month? What I did was I took it back to a game store. This is where I confess my sins. And told them that my auntie had bought it, but she'd lost the receipt. Could I trade it in? I traded it in for Medal of Honor Rising Sun.
Yes,
you monster.
That is awful. I want you to write a letter of apology to game.
So, I don't have a game story, but I did buy an inflatable kayak. Well, it was this summer. Like after being on holiday, everybody was out on inflatable paddleboards and kayaks, and I saw a cheap one. I thought, go for that. Bought it, went out on the sea with my 5-year-old boy, and it basically deflated in the middle and ended up being like an inverted triangle. At which point I was like, shit, get him out. So
not ideal.
I did take it back. I got money back, but still, that was one of those things. I had these grand visions of life on the waves,
yeah,
and it didn't really work out.
I suppose I bought like the NES Classic Mini. Maybe played that for about 20 minutes.
Oh, God, yeah, the SNES Classic. Yes, absolutely. Same thing. I thought, Scarlett, my daughter, let's play this. I love these games. And you realise that they're just not interesting to play as a 10-year-old. Well, I think she's probably 8 at the time or something.
Yeah.
Right, so I have a piece of feedback from, I don't know if this is this person's name, Apollo Dingo? Is that really their name?
It's the name they gave. I mean, if it is, very well done.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
He says, or she says, I think you guys are sleeping on Corpopath for Cyberpunk. Specifically, the standard trope in many Cyberpunk books is that you have an ex-corpo who is fighting for justice and literally got terminated from the company because they chose to help someone over the interests of the corporation. If you glance at the Shadowrun stories, usually the group doing the run are composed of an ex-corpo, a nomad, and typically a street kid. Those same tropes show up in William Gibson too. So I don't really know that much about cyberpunk lore at all. Mm. When you literally have to go and do an assault to a corporate headquarters, you really need that corpo skill set. P.S. Check out Richard K. Morgan's Thin Air, because basically the most badass cyberpunk book starring an ex-corpo ever. Much better than Altered Carbon 2.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't take a lot to be better than Altered Carbon, would it?
I'd agree, Matthew. A lot of people like Altered Carbon. I don't understand.
No, bollocks. Bollocks.
I've never heard of Thin Air.
No. Joe is definitely up for Corpo, though.
Yeah, Joe wants Corpo, because he thinks it parallels Elijah Wood's journey in Green Street.
I recognise the traits that they can bring to a group, but my heart's a street kid, I think.
You're just so anti-Corpo, aren't you, Matt? At heart.
I hate him.
I'm still a nomad boy, I think, but I'm willing to think about it.
So I've not actually watched any of the stuff on Cyberpunk, so I'm hoping to go in blind.
Oh, that's probably a good way of doing it. I was going to do that, but they do keep revealing very interesting things.
I've never really played that much of a CD Projekt Red game, never played any of the Witcher games or anything like that, so I don't know whether I'm going to like it.
I think The Witch is probably actually not really a gauge as to what Cyberpunk will be like. I think it's a gauge for the quality bar, but
yeah.
I think they'll be very different RPGs.
Yeah, if you enjoyed like Deus Ex, that's probably closer.
Yeah, like certainly the stuff that I think the last thing I probably saw was either a Gamescom or E3 behind this. I think I was sat next to you, Cardi.
Mm.
Probably one of the very hot rooms. So it must have been Gamescom a couple of years ago. And that looked amazing. But I don't really want to know too much more than that, if I can help it.
I have high hopes. I've got one more piece of feedback from Michael Newman. Says, hello, gentlemen. Greetings from Boston. Long time, first time here. Just wanted to get a couple of things out of the way before we start. So, one, you're all lovely, and I quite enjoy listening to you all speak about stuff. Also, if you could bring in Dale for that weird fourth slot from the beginning of the pandemic where he chimes in every 20 minutes. I forgot about that. That was quite good. That was back when we kind of needed someone to produce the podcast when we were using a different method. But maybe if Dale's up for it, we'll call him up sometime.
As a spare part.
Yeah. Best chip. Brackets. Though I do prefer the term crisp. That's because you're very wise. I'm not sure if you have these in the UK, but they're all dressed.
It's
an absolute delight. It's a mixture it's a mixture of barbecue ketchup, sour cream, onion, and salt and vinegar. I know that sounds weird.
That's disgusting.
But I'm sure it's like, what are you tasting there? Everything,
it's,
I suppose.
Like it's all dressed, mate. I think you can only get them in Canada. I've never seen them over here, but I think it's Ruffles all dressed. Very good.
Oh. I mean, what are you I'm trying to think what you I mean, yeah, it sounds good. Sounds very salty, but I suppose that's what you want in a crisp. So, 3, best pick a mix. We don't quite have those here, but I'm a big fan of a peach ring or a strawberry cream puff when it comes to a salted candy. I don't know what either of those are, but I'm up for it.
I think I've had a peach ring before. I think they're a bit like... Ooh. We're getting someplace God, here, aren't we?
Here we go. Did you go and see a doctor for it, etc., etc.?
How was it?
I think I've had those imported before. They're just very
imported.
Peachy. You know, like the like the sugary gummy rings that you have, like in Haribo. They're peach flavored. Kind of got sugar on the edge.
I'm up for those. We call a sugary frozen stick in plastic tube a freeze pop. That's also what we call them. So
ice pops,
ice poles, whatever you wanna call them. Number five. I've never drowned, nor have I come close. Well, I assumed you'd never drowned, but one time I used a Corona Rita, the little bottle, to open another bottle and ended up slicing my tendon. So don't do that. They invented bottle openers for a reason. Yeah, don't slice your tendons. I partially tore the tendon in my shoulder once at university because I was drunkenly running down. If anyone knows the University of Leeds very well, there's some big steps at parts of the university. Don't sprint down those when you're drunk because you might fall over into a bush and tear your shoulder. And then still go out to the club afterwards because you're an idiot covered in blood.
What a lad.
No, an idiot. Okay, now to Michael's actual question. Now to the point from last week's pod that finally got me to write in regarding exclusive content and the effect it has. Console exclusives are something that I believe we have come to accept as a collective when it comes to specific games, but there seems to be quite the range in severity when it comes to console exclusive content. It could potentially be recency bias, or I own an Xbox bias, but I feel that this is something that Sony has really taken a liking to and they really don't get bashed enough for it, until the Avengers business came up. Joe mentioned last week that an industry that appears to be coming more open, and while I hope that this is the case, I'm not sure Sony is willing to play nice. During the PS4, Xbox One generation, Sony is the clear-cut winner in every measurable metric, but I also feel that the term history is written by the victors is coming into play here a bit. While Xbox, from a position of weakness, has been making strides to give benefits to both Xbox and PC gamers, while playing nice with Nintendo as well, Sony has been using exclusive content in a number of high-profile cross-platform games, and no one seems to have brought it up prior to this in any significant way. What I'm trying to say is that while I hope that the perceived rejection of the Spider-Man exclusivity in Avengers turns into actual rejection of console-exclusive content, but more likely this will be a flash in a pan, and in a few months the majority of folks will be playing a Spider-Man on their PS4s and 5s, and Sony will be looking at the next cross-platform game to sink its teeth into. Do you feel there's any actual traction to the push for all the kids to share their toys, or do you think we'll be sitting in our separate sandboxes for the foreseeable future? Keep up the good work, and Simon, we haven't heard about the Shed in some time, so please provide updates on that. The Shed's doing very well. It's been very warm here, so it's a bit of a sweatbox to be in at the moment, but there may be a video coming out next week. If you're lucky, you'll see a glimpse of my Shed. There's a tease for you.
Featuring as a bee artist in...
Yeah, and if it's a hot day, you're going to be in your pants.
Yeah. Oh, it's not on IGN, this video. It's not.
Oh, is this your OnlyFans? I knew you were setting it up.
Very special.
Yeah. It's going well. Yeah, 12 subscribers so far. But
nice.
Premium content, mainly Shed-based. But yeah, do we think that Sony, this generation, are going to be more willing to play with others?
Sort of not based off... Sony has always been the stick in the mud. In terms of, like, they were always the last person to kind of shift when it came to big, like, cross-play elements. Especially, I think, Fortnite, they were the last person to give in.
Yeah.
Rocket League, they were the last person to give in. Sony like to do things very traditionally in the console market, which creates some very, very interesting, brilliant opportunities. But also does mean that... I've always felt that the PlayStation 4 is quite an old-fashioned console. It works. It's like a PlayStation 2, but it's graphically much more impressive and has incredible single-player content, whereas Xbox have constantly been innovating in ways that I think because people largely do just want to play really cool-looking single-player campaigns, like that's what Sony do well. But they've never... like Microsoft are always experimenting in these different ways, which is, I guess, to make up some lost ground. But I do think... in many ways makes Xbox a more attractive proposition. It's just that when you've got the power of Sony and the power of, like, it's not even close this generation. I think it's even more obvious than, like, whereas last gen, Xbox 360 was on top and PlayStation was below, I think the boundary this generation around has just been PlayStation are so many more leagues ahead that they have been able to stick to their guns and go, no, we exclusives are good for that company. It makes them a lot of money. Whether next generation works for them, I guess, depends on how closed they can make that kind of disparity between them. Is Game Pass and the innovations that Microsoft have made, is that enough to kickstart them off with a good start to this generation, which evens the boundaries
a bit? It's going to be harder
without
a Halo, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But also, kind of, what are Sony going to have out the gate? Like,
yeah,
I'd imagine Spider-Man, but
it looks like
we
maybe Demon Souls as well.
Yeah.
That might be.
And Demon Souls, I don't think, is a system seller. I think Demon Souls is a system seller for people like me that like Dark Souls and missed Demon Souls the first time around, and people that did play Demon Souls on PS3 and have that nostalgia for it. But it's not like Halo, which I don't think you need that niche interest to be interested in a Halo game. It's a big first person shooter. Of course you want to play
it. It might be that games like Avengers and, to an extent, I wouldn't be surprised, the same with Call of Duty. Those are the cross-platform games that launch. If you can get something a bit extra in Call of Duty or a bit extra in Avengers, that will tip you towards getting a PlayStation over an Xbox.
I think the difference in... I know that kind of Michael mentions that this isn't the first time Sony have done this. I think this is the first time that Sony have done this, which is very notable for the player experience. It's here or there to buy an Assassin's Creed game that's got two extra missions if you bought it on PlayStation, because those missions will be garbage. They won't be any good. They can't be, because the pipelines can't be there to spend that much time on it. I think Spider-Man's probably not going to be the greatest character in the world, unless this whole thing of where Carnage might be on Xbox or something like that. It might be that all consoles have Spider-Man, but you only get Miles Morales if you're on Xbox and you can only play Peter Parker. If that's the case, then I can imagine Spider-Man being a good character. If it is just Spider-Man is only available on PlayStation, I don't think the pipelines will have been there to make him a compelling character. So it will be that he's just the garbage side character. But because he's Spider-Man, because he's so important to the Marvel mythos, that's what makes this a huge unfair advantage for Sony.
Yeah.
And yeah, if I was an Xbox-only person, I'd be fucking pissed off.
Yeah.
Like, that's... And it's because he's so integral to that universe, which is why it feels so much more unfair.
I think that's the thing. It's not necessarily the exclusivity of the games, because you're always going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the player experience on games that are on both platforms is the bigger kick in the nuts for me.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And yeah, I would happily boycott a game if one of my favorite franchises came out. I'm trying to think. Zelda came out and it didn't have, I don't know, Epona, and it was a remake. It was only on this platform, whatever. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that experience that you want.
No.
Don't do it.
But you know, let us
but
know.
But I do think Spider-Man in some shape or form will be in the Xbox.
Yeah. Or an equivalent. Yeah. Someone with the same moveset anyway. But, you know, it's DC Fandome this weekend, so there's going to be lots of news, including Suicide Squad, Batman games, and obviously a lot of film stuff. So maybe feedback, IGN_UK feedback, IGN.com. What got you most excited from DC Fandome? Because I imagine
also,
next Friday we'll be talking a lot about what happened there.
Tenet will be out.
Exactly.
Next week too. So if you go and see that, tell us about it and let us know what your cinema experience was like.
We'll be in the throes of Gamescom by that point as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, yeah.
Good
it's a busy
God.
Week busy. Coming up.
That's it for this week's podcast. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Matt.
It's a pleasure.
And also thank you, as always, to you for listening. And we'll be back same time next week. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.